You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned.
And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And I'm not dead yet.
Well, we are continuing our month of witchcraft movies. Actually, it's not really going to be a month. It's more like 2 weeks of witchcraft movies, thanks to the apocalypse. But with
watching this movie makes it feel like a month.
This is true. This is very true. We are of course, discussing episode 42, Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. This came out in 2000, was a very long hour and 30 minutes. directed by Joe, I'm going to say his name wrong, probably Berlinger. The only other film we have watched, actually the only other film he's done we've watched, was extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile, that Ted Bundy movie. Other than that, he's done a shitload of documentaries.
Yeah, these are the only two movies he's done.
Yeah.
The Ted Bundy movie was great.
I actually really enjoyed that one. So it's like, hey, he learned a thing or two.
Thank God.
Well, that's all right, because the writer, Dick Beebe, he wrote House on Haunted Hill, then he wrote this, so.
True. Although, I did crack up when they said his writing, or when they said the credit in the title, in the credits, where they were, like, written by, and it just, in my head, I went, Dick Beebe! I started cracking up.
It's Beebe.
I know, but it looks like Beebe.
Like Beebe Kids?
Exactly. But to be fair about Joe Berlinger, however you say his name, he was used to doing documentaries, and Extremely Wicked was very like docudrama style. So, you know, it was kind of more in his wheelhouse than this was.
Yeah.
But as far as actors go, we have this is weird and kind of like a dropped thread. They have people with the same first name. Their character name is the same as their real name. But Jeffrey Patterson was played by Jeffrey Donovan, who we know from that old, remember the old TV show Witchblade, the 90s? Yep. He was in that. Law and Order, Burn Notice, Fargo, and then Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile.
And he was in that great movie on Hulu, Villains.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's so good.
You said it's on Hulu?
Yeah.
I will have to look into that. And then we have Tristan Ryler, played by Tristan Schuyler. The only thing I knew her from was Angel, the Buffy spinoff. But
yeah, she didn't really do much.
She was also in Law and Order. She really didn't do a lot. Then we had Stephen Ryan Parker, played by Stephen Baker Turner, also in Law and Order and Sex in the City. Erica Gearson was played by Erica Leershin. the thing we would know her from primarily is the 2003 Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot. She was the hitchhiker that they pick up who pulls the gun out of her crotch and shoots herself in the head.
Yeah, that's the only movie I recognized her from.
She was also in Wrong Turn 2, which I will argue is a pretty damn good movie. Like, I know a lot of people hated it, but I love it. I think it's a fun flick. Actually, I really enjoyed all the Wrong Turn movies. They're bad, but they're fun.
I've only seen the first one, Eliza Dushku.
You should watch at least part five, because Pinhead, Doug Bradley, he's in it. He's a bad guy, and he's fucking terrifying in that.
Ooh. You had me at Doug Bradley.
Yeah, he's really good. But she was also in The Sopranos. And then we have Kim Diamond the character Kim Diamond played by Kim Director. She was in Summer of Sam, Sex in the City, Law and Order, Orange is the New Black, Gotham, Split, and that TV show Nosferatu. So she was in quite a bit. And then Sheriff Cravens, played by Lanny Flaherty, was in Natural Born Killers, Signs, Waterworld, and Men in Black 3. I recognized him, and it was bugging me. I'm like, where the fuck did I see this guy from? So I had to look him up, and it was like, oh, okay, Natural Born Killers. I recognized him from that. But yeah,
do you want me to answer the question that's on everybody's mind right now?
Sure.
Who is the good value equivalent of these actors? Steven is the good value Dax Shepard. But wait, there's more. Jeff, he's the good value James Franco. And ready? Kim, she's like a swirl. She's the good value China and Lucy Lawless hybrid.
Oh my God.
Okay.
An interesting fact about the name they gave her, Kim Diamond.
Yeah.
It was based off the liking of King Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
I did read that.
From Merciful Hate.
Merciful Fate.
Fate.
Yeah. From this point forward, she'll just be known as Gothy. Or varying versions of Gothy. Because in my notes, I have a lot of nicknames for her.
King Diamond's makeup is way better than hers.
Well, yeah, but he could probably pay a better makeup artist than what they brought on.
Amen to that.
I'm sure they didn't have a huge budget for the makeup.
No, I don't think they had anything really together for this film. It felt like Artisan, and in fact, this is in the trivia.
Well,
Artisan just did a fucking fast turnaround with this.
Yeah, and that's why the original writers and directors dropped out.
Right. Well, go ahead.
They blew their entire budget on Kurt Loder.
They blew their load on Kurt Loder.
Yes.
Yes. Don't forget about Conan O'Brien.
Oh, that's right.
And there was a couple others.
Yeah, there was quite a few. See, now, I don't know. Here's the thing with this. I feel like this film really suffered from lack of rewrites and polish. Because I know, unpopular opinion, I actually like the idea of this movie quite a lot. It's just the execution. I feel like you should have done another take on some of these scenes.
Well, a lot of the takes were taken out and redone by Artisan. So that may have been...
Oh, that might be the issue then.
Because that's what Joe Berlinger was complaining about, saying that a lot of his concepts were taken out because Artisan wanted different ones in.
Well, I know he was bitching about, like, for example, like the music, which I did like a lot of the music in this. Of course, there's also Nickelback on the soundtrack, so that kind of negates anything good.
It brings it from a 9 to a 4.
Yeah, exactly. The inclusion of Nickelback really lost him some points. But I know, like, he wanted to have a certain type of music and feel throughout the film, but Artisan was really pushing for that whole MTV generation thing. Right. You know, the late 90s, everything had to be all MTV generation. But
well, he wanted Witchcraft by Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
But they chose to go with Disposable Teens, which is fine, except for this takes place in 98 and 99. Disposable Teens didn't come out to 2000.
Good point.
I don't know. I like the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I really miss driving. I do miss my commute to work because that's when I really listen to music. And I've really been wanting to listen to Poe the last couple days.
Oh, I have a playlist on Spotify with her on there. But yeah, actually that is one thing since we're on the soundtrack, I did comment on how the soundtrack has some great songs, but also Nickelback. But yeah, it's like Disposable Teens by Marilyn Manson, like you had said, Feel Good Hit of the Summer by Queens of the Stone Age, Soul Auctioneer by Death in Vegas, Haunted by Poe, Dragula by Rob Zombie. There was a lot of good, like late 90s, rock in there. And, I don't know. I do like a lot of the songs on the soundtrack. And the first movie was also, it also had a lot of good songs in the soundtrack. I remember buying I think it was called Josh's Mixtape. And it had like Bauhaus on there and friggin' Sisters of Mercy. There was a lot of good stuff.
I don't remember the soundtrack to the first one because I was so nauseous after watching the movie that I just wanted to block the entire experience out.
Understandable. And if you have motion sickness, that's a hard one to get through. But what were you going to say, Maurice?
So there's no merciful hate. I mean, fate.
Exactly.
King Diamond is listening. You better watch it. I love Merciful Fate, and I love King Diamond. I saw him in Toronto a few years ago.
Yeah, he's one I've never got a chance to see.
Oh, excellent. Very theatrical.
I've never seen Merciful Fate, though, either. So, and I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Probably not.
Who knows? I've seen weirder things. I've seen the Misfits get back together, so that's money true. Talk.
But the basic plot of this film, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a group of tourists arrive in Burkittsville, Maryland, after seeing the original Blair Witch Project movie. And they want to explore the mythology and the phenomenon, basically go out in the woods and all that. And instead of seeing, you know, sights from the film, they end up kind of facing their own fears and neuroses because of the witch. So it all turns out to be true, that type of thing. Now, I love the concept behind this for one reason. And it's the same reason I love the concept behind Human Centipede 2, but also hate the execution. People have been saying forever that horror movies will make people do crazy things. Horror movies will, you know, harm people that watch them. And I love it when a sequel tries to take the original film and say, like, oh, this was a movie in the universe of the film. Like, this was a movie, and people are doing crazy shit because of what they saw in the movie. I think that's a really fun idea to explore. And I feel like it was just done poorly both here and with the case of the Human Centipede Part 2. But it's such fertile ground, and no one seems to do it right. So we open this film with the following statement. It says, the following is a fictionalized reenactment of the events that occurred after the release of the Blair Witch Project. It is based on public records, local Maryland TV broadcasts, and hundreds of hours of taped interviews. To protect the privacy of certain individuals, some names have been changed. And then it says summer of 1999. So what they're trying to do is say, like, this really happened, like, you know, we know that we told you that with the first movie, and then you saw all the actors who died on MTV's Movie Awards. So we know that you know that was fake, but this is the real story.
Yeah, changing the names to the first name of the actor portraying that character. Exactly. That's original.
Exactly. But so we get the... it's a summer of 1999, and we get an MTV News, like, montage with Kurt Loder, and he's talking about the original Blair Witch Project. And then we get, like, different cuts of different, like, VJs and then various other channels of people talking about the Blair Witch movie, like, Siskel and Ebert and, you know, and who else was that? Oh, you said Conan O'Brien. There was somebody else I'm forgetting, I'm sure, but...
Wasn't Jay Leno one of them?
Yes, Jay Leno. That's who I was thinking of. I was like, I know there's another talk show host that they showed. But you get to this montage, and then we see the townsfolk of Burkittsville. And we get a whole montage of them.
Very, very redneck.
Do you know who my favorite one was?
Which one?
The woman who said that, you know, it gives her an excuse to wear makeup and a nice nightgown to go down to get the mail. She was my favorite.
That was funny. Well, see, I did like this opening. Again, like, I felt like it was setting us up for a really good film, where we're seeing the different interviews with the locals. Some of them are super. What's that?
A lot of people thought they were setting us up for a good film.
And, oh, we were all let down.
Yep.
But I love that, because the way they were doing it was, like, they had the locals. Some locals were super excited about the notoriety that the film brought to their little town. Like, they're selling stick figures. Like, they're making the Blair Witch stick figures. They're selling rocks from their yard, dirt from their yard, and people are buying it. So they're like, well, shit, this is a whole nother source of income. I love it. And then you got the locals, like Susie was talking about, who are pissed off, saying, like, you know, I'm constantly on camera. You know, they should have set it in a fictionalized town. They didn't think about what their actions were going to do. And then she goes, well, at least I have an excuse to basically gussing myself up to go get the mail.
Because she might get herself a man.
But then I love, we cut to a scene of a bunch of goth kids in the woods. And Sheriff Craven's yelling at him through a bullhorn going, go on, get, ain't no damn witch out here. I fucking lost it. I was like, that is fantastic, because it's like They scatter like cockroaches.
La cucaracha.
Well, shoe fist.
Oh, goth kids in the woods just scattering from the cops.
Why are goth kids in the woods in the first place? Like, they're totally out of their element.
They were
they're listening to heavy metal and getting stoned.
I'm thinking of that video that surfaces every year at Christmas time with the Gravers. Yes. And they dance to Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You.
I'm telling you, it's not Christmas until I see that video. Oh, shit. So we get one of our primary characters. We see Jeff giving an interview, and I had to rewind this because I was laughing so fucking hard. He's going on, and he's talking in the interview, and, like, as he's talking, people are driving by honking. He's like, hey, man, what's going on, man? You know, as they pass.
I'm glad you clarified that, because I actually made a note. Wait, is Jeff the same? The Jeff is the same guy in the psych hospital, but is Jeff also the local that they interview at the beginning? Who's like, and we were like, yeah, and then she was like, yeah, and I was like, yeah, and they were like, dude, what's mine say? Dude, exactly. What's mine say? Sweet.
That's exactly it. But I love it because he goes, you know, I believe in the witch, man. There are naysayers who, you know, say nay. I laughed so damn hard. Like, this is what I was talking about, where I'm like, this could have used a rewrite or two.
No, but that added the authenticity of the interviews with the locals.
True. That's a good point. But so now we get a montage of Crazy Jeff is crazy. We see it says 1 year earlier. We see Jeff in the hospital, and it says Burkitt County Psychiatric Center. Now, they're lubing up a giant tube and shoving it up his nose. The doctor doing it is just smoking the whole time. And then, I don't know what this was, but it looked like they poured a giant cup of jizz into his nose tube. What the fuck was that liquid?
It was like nutrition. Like, if you have a G-tube, you can't take food by mouth. So it's like nutrient-rich goo that you consume, and it gives you nutrition. Oh, my God. I'm talking like Jeff. Naysayers that say nay. But that's what that was.
But see, then we cut to the next scene, and he's totally got jizz mouth.
Because he was spitting up.
I'm telling you, it was jizz. I was there.
He didn't want to swallow, so he spit.
Basically, Maurice is saying that was a bukkake scene.
And here I'm like, I can draw on real life experience from my last job that yes, that is possible for you to. It is possible for you to vomit, because if you take the nutrition in too fast, it like overloads your stomach, and then it has nowhere to go, so it comes up. Mm-hmm. That's why when people have G tubes, like the nutrition is fed through like a machine, and it gives it to you at a certain rate, a certain like cc's per hour, half hour, whatever.
This is still all sounding like Rule 34 to me.
I mean, take what you, whatever. I actually don't have a smart ass comment for once, and you guys are like, Rule 34.
Jeff got jizz mouth.
Can we make that a hashtag? Can we make that happen?
Hashtag Jeff got jizz mouth. Oh, Lord. So we, like, it came.
Bukkake in Nagasaki. Okay, oh, keep going.
We got the giggles. Oh, man. Okay, so just in case that wasn't enough that Jeff was crazy, we cut to a sped up montage scene of him bouncing off the walls in a padded room while wearing a straitjacket, and then being hosed down in a cold shower, and then back to the padded room. So it's like, oh, okay, so he's real crazy.
He got really sweaty from trying to practice parkour without use of his limbs. And that scene where they're hosing him down, I thought of that scene in Super Troopers.
Yes. Oh, man.
Oh, but we haven't been broken in a while. Oh, back to the good times.
I was going to say, this is, we've barely scratched the surface of this film. I think we're going to be laughing a lot. But so now we cut to a title card that says Autumn 1999. And then it says, you know, we get that sweet early 2000s, like After Effects visual shot of Book of Shadows kind of waving up onto the screen. We cue Marilyn Manson. I was like, oh my god, this feels so much like early 90s VFX. And we get a lot of that in this movie. So we get the opening credits are a flyby over the forest, intercut with a murder montage. Now, the murder montage is going to rear its ugly head throughout the rest of this fucking movie before we find out what's happening. And you'll get to see the same leather-clad bloody hand fall on a rock over and over and over again, because apparently they really liked that shot. And then
it's hashtag art fuck.
Exactly. And this is where I have in my notes, written by Dick Bebe. But so now we cut straight from that to Jeff in an interrogation room, and it says Monday, November 15th, 1999. Now, nothing is said. We just see Jeff sitting there with his eyes closed at the table, one officer in the background, and Sheriff Cravens kind of walking around the side of him. And then it cuts from that to a camo van on the thruway that says Blair Witch Hunt Tours on the side. And we see Jeff is driving, and this is where we meet Steven, Tristan, and Erica on the way to pick up Kim, or Gothy McGothpants.
Erica is also, and I forget the actress's name, Erica is the good value from Princess Bride. The princess from Princess Bride. She was also in The Mask. Princess
Buttercup?
Yes.
I rolled my eyes so hard. Like, anytime Erica talked, I could see my brain because my eyes rolled back in my head that far. Like, she is every 90s spooky cliche rolled into one with the whole, like, you know, how witches are good and Wiccan is good and blah. It's like they took every cliche from Charmed and The Craft and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and rolled it into one character. Like, yes, we're all aware of this. Anyone watching this movie knows this. You don't need to tell us more. It annoyed the hell out of me. But we find out she's a good witch, you know, and it's like, yeah, we know. And then Jeff goes, Wiccan, Wiccan good. And I did laugh at. I
was like, da, na, 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 down, down. When a problem comes along, you must Wiccan.
Blessed be and all that.
That's my musical contribution to this episode.
So they stop at a graveyard because where else are you going to pick up Gothy McGotherson? And she's laying on a gravestone. It's like, oh, come on. The fucking cliches are strong with this movie. So we find out at this point that this is Jeff's first tour in spite of what everyone thought. They were like, but your website said 100 served. And he was like, yeah, my website shop. This is my first tour. We're all virgins here. And I was like, wah, wah.
Not Tristan. Wah, wah, wah.
Sing. So they go to this little general store for beer and supplies. And of course, the locals don't like your kind round here. And
here's my observation about that general store. Because we meet the lady later on in the movie as well.
Oh, God.
Paid to just push yogurt around in a cart all day long?
It was cans of deviled ham.
Oh, it was deviled ham? I thought it was yogurt. I thought it was yogurt.
It's like 200 cans of deviled ham.
Is that like her purgatory? She has to like earn her way into heaven by pushing a shopping cart of deviled ham around a general store in Hicktown in Maryland.
And it was one of them tiny little baby carts, too.
Exactly.
Oh, it was like the little kid carts at Trader Joe's.
Shopper in training.
Oh my god, I was crying at that. I'm like, what the fuck is she doing with that? Oh, but yeah, so we get all the towny looky-loos, including this creepy mechanic who's just laying on the floor working on the cooler, which he'll come into play later. So then we see, like Susie said, the big lady with the cans of deviled ham just staring at him. We get another cut to murder montage, and then we cut back to the group at, like, outside the forest parked, and they're all packing up their stuff. We find out that Gothy Magoo is only there because she thought the movie was cool, and she thinks the legend is bullshit. But we find out she's psychic because of course she is. because, you know, she's goth, so we need a cliche. And then we find out that Tristan and Steven are there for, they're doing research for the book they're writing. And Erica, we don't know why she's there just yet, but we will find out shortly. So this is how we find out that Gothy is a psychic. She asks Tristan, how far along are you with, the, or like, how long have you been pregnant, basically? And she's like shocked that you know, Gothy knew, of course. And she goes, and you don't want to have the baby, do you? But Steven wants it. And she's like, I don't know what to do. And like, so they have this little back and forth, and then they walk off into the woods. She's in a dilly of a pickle right there. But
little gherkin.
The gherkin. So we end up at the ruins of the house from the first Blair Witch. And this is where Heather's footage was found, like buried in the cobblestone. So they're there looking around, and we see all these spooky looking runic symbols. And oh my God, Erica has one of those actually moments, because they're like, ooh, these ruins are kind of spooky. And she's like, ah, actually, they're very positive, but only people who don't understand witchcraft would think they're scary. Like, she just pissed me off.
That's actually how she talks, too.
Like, what you guys couldn't see was I was pushing up imaginary glasses while I was saying that.
And wanting to talk to the manager.
Oh, no, that's a totally different character. Oh, that's Karen. Oh, man. We haven't had a good Karen in a while. I'm surprised. Oh, you know what, though? We might have a Karen in Drag Me to Hell. I can't remember completely, but I feel like we have a Karen in Drag Me to Hell. So maybe coming up. But so she does her whole, like, don't be afraid of them, blah, blah, blah. And then they ask what the story is with this giant ass tree in the center of the ruins is. And Jeff looks all shocked, and he's like, that wasn't there before. And of course, no one believes him. And he even points out that if it was there, why would people have built their home here? Because they would have had a giant tree, like, right in the center of their house. And they're like, yeah, maybe leave that out of your next tour. No one's buying it. So that will play a role in a little while. So we get another murder montage cut, and then cut back to Erica doing some hoodoo voodoo, and she's trying to commune with the Blair Witch, who she says was misunderstood, and she wants her to be her teacher. She's like, be my spooky Sherpa up Goth Mountain. And So she goes on to talk about how the Blair Witch was dragged into the woods and left to die by the townsfolk. And she's getting more and more amped up, like how horrible this was. And Tristan says to her, you make her sound helpless. I thought witches could summon powerful energy. And she goes, well, yeah, we can, but we still have to eat shit and die just like the rest of you. We just look good doing it. And it's like, like I even noted, I don't think my eyes could have rolled back any harder.
Robert Downey Jr. gif.
Exactly. Oh man, I gave myself a headache watching that. But so now we get a setup camp montage. We see Erica casting a protection spell. Tristan and Steven are setting up their tents and going over the research. Jeff is setting up cameras everywhere, and Gothy McSaddenstein drinks. I have a lot of Gothy names for her. But so now we get this campfire chat, and Erica is going on about, she's like, she wants to know why the cast of the Blair Witch movie didn't fuck. She's like, you know, two guys and a girl alone in the woods, and like they're super stressed, and you know, they have the best stress reliever right there. How come they didn't just fuck? And of course, Jeff's eating it up. He's like, yeah, they should have. Oh, God, it was so bad. Then we find out that Erica's dad is a preacher, and that her parents didn't approve of her witchy ways, so they kind of disowned her. So we're getting little bits of their background, you know, like Steven's talking a little bit about his book and his research and you know, what Tristan has done to help him with that and her research. And then, we get a little montage of Jeff talking to each person. And oh my God, this was painful. He's talking to Erica, and he goes, I want to make a film, man. Wicca, a way of life. Translation, if I make a movie about you, will you fuck me then?
Oh, Lord.
That's about it.
That's exactly what he was trying to do. Oh, and the other thing I forgot to mention in their little montage of, like, each individual, we got some more cliches where Erica was going on about, she's like, Wiccans aren't evil, man. And then Kim was like, Goths aren't serial killers. And Steven's like, people believe all the lies they're told from the media. The Bermuda Triangle is a weird concept, man.
Oh, yeah. Then you got Erica saying, people think I drink blood and eat children, all because I'm Wiccan.
Oh, it was so dumb. And don't get me wrong, I know I'm coming down hard on this movie. I was pretty entertained. I know we didn't go around the table at the start, but like, I was pretty entertained with this film. But man, there's a lot of bad shit. There's a lot of dumb shit. So, oh my God. So after Jeff kind of strikes out with, you know, Erica, she's just like, right on, you know, about the movie. She doesn't want to fuck him. So now he starts recording Gothy McSpooks, and it's like, Goth, a way of life, a documentary all about you. Translation, can I fuck you yet? It's like, dude, seriously. And then she... Oh, God. She goes on talking about how, like, you know, this isn't a costume. And immediately in my head, I heard Suicide from Return of the Living Dead yelling, what do you think this is, a costume? It's a way of life. Oh, I even wrote my note, well, stop biting Suicide style.
Well, we find out later who she really wants to fuck.
Yeah, true. And, and who she did fuck, actually. But, and then I love this little back and forth where Steven and Tristan are just arguing, and they're drinking, like, profusely. And this is the thing, we just found out that Tristan was preggers, and, like, I get she doesn't want the baby, but she is drinking like a damn fish, and it's like, they took a moment to be like, hey, I'm pregnant, and now just consume, and she was drinking as many beers as possible. So then they're arguing, and Steve goes, he's like, babe, I know what you're saying. I just think it's total bullshit. And she's like, I think you're being a monomaniacal reductionist. Oh, God. I love the example of early 2000s clever dialogue, or what they thought was clever dialogue. So suddenly we hear a scream out in the woods. And another group shows up, and they have the tour group standoff. And I, oh God, this is so fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff gets all, like, he gets his balls up. Like, he jumps up. And it's like, what are you doing here, man? And they're like, where the Blair Witch walk? And he's like, yeah, well, where the Blair Witch hunt? And they're just yelling at each other. And then they keep arguing, and they say that they're going to take the campsite from them. And Erica says, be careful, man. This is going to come back on you threefold. And the guy goes, what's she talking about? And Jeff goes, it means your balls are going to fall off in 3 days. I got to admit, that part cracked me the fuck up. But so the others start to act scared. And say, you know, they're really freaked out. They just want to get some sleep because they saw something at Coffin Rock. And they're like, I just can't even think about it. I just want to get some sleep and get the hell out of here. And so the other tourists start being like, ooh, well, what's at Coffin Rock? And they convince them to go check out Coffin Rock. So they take off and leave them alone. And as they're leaving, Jeff's handing out business cards like, go to the Blair Witch Hunt. Go to the Blair Witch Hunt. And they're like, what if they come back? And then we get Gothy McMind Reader uses her spooky goth powers and says that they won't come back. So we finally get, someone finally says to Tristan, you know, how many drinks have you had? Because, you know, baby. And we get the drunken montage of them all dancing around the fire for some reason. Murder montage follows that. Then we get Gothy McStereotype communing with an owl or something. She's, like, staring at an owl and, like, seeing through the owl's eyes. I don't get what happened there.
I got a hangover just from watching them. I'm not in my 20s anymore.
I just think, picture you turning off the movie, grabbing a bottle of aspirin and a bottle of water.
And going down for a nap.
Oh, man. So now we cut to the next morning and we see Tristan walk out to the lake holding a towel. She shoves a towel in the water and blood kind of burbles up. And we see a baby arm and hear crying. And then she wakes up and it's like, oh, okay. Well, we get the little dream sequence. And now in the actual morning, it's snowing paper.
Can we also mention how there was that little exchange, who can yell bullshit louder?
Forgot about that.
Between the two groups. Bullshit. Bullshit. Bullshit!
I completely forgot about that. I was laughing too hard about the balls falling off thing. Oh, shit.
Me balls.
But yes, you are correct. They started just yelling bullshit. Again, the dialogue in this is wonderful. So we get the paper snowing down on the camp, and everyone starts to wake up. Like, what the fuck? We see the cameras are all smashed. Everyone apparently blacked out. Steven wakes up and realizes that the paper is his and Tristan's destroyed research. And there's a line of dialogue in here that I absolutely love. They talk about how there's no backups, how these were all the originals. Why in the fuck would you go out researching a story in the middle of nowhere with all of your original material and no backups? Like, what kind of idiot does that? Like, that is...
Well, I mean, look at the people.
And that's what irked me, because I'm like, this could have used a rewrite so bad. Like, you know how they could have... Oh, good.
Like, he was like, oh, we must have blacked out. You think, from all that booze and drugs they're doing?
Exactly.
There's no possible way they could have blacked out.
They smoked 10 pounds of pot and drank like a 24-pack each. But here's how they could have fixed that whole, like, this is, you know, we didn't have, this was our hard copy. They could have had them have a laptop with them that had all of their files backed up onto that was also smashed along with the cameras. There, you fixed it. That would have been much more believable than, I never thought to make a copy of all of my years of research. Like, just, oh, that irked me.
Also, laptops back then, they weighed like 80 pounds.
That is true. That would have been hard to break.
Exactly. They don't make them like that anymore. Those were some sturdy laptops back in the simpler times.
Yeah. Oh, the simpler times of the late 90s and early 2000s. But yeah, so we get, now we get Gothy McPlot Device using her spooky goth power. She tells them where the camera, or that the cameras were busted, but the tapes are okay. And they're like, well, how do you know? And she's like, I just know. And they're like, well, where are the tapes? She's like, they're where they found Heather's tapes. So they go and they dig in the corner of the foundation. And we find, we find the tapes down there. And she's like, you know, or they start asking her, like, what are the tapes doing down there? Did you put them down there? And she's like, I don't know. I just knew they were down there. Only the script writer knows why they were down there.
We'll find out at the very end why they were down there.
True, which still doesn't make sense, but we will find that out.
That seems to be the running theme with this movie. Right. I would say film, but it doesn't deserve that word.
Oh my god. So the group turns on each other and all starts arguing.
Bullshit!
Bullshit! Bullshit! You're bullshit! So they're rabble, 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 rabble. They're all arguing. And Tristan starts not feeling well and kind of like leans against the wall and sits down. And now you see she's got her hands in her lap and she pulls her hand up to her face like she's going to get sick. And she smears blood on her face. And then it's like, oh, shit, what's going on? And you see that her lap is filled with blood. So something has gone wrong.
She fucked up them brand new pair of pants.
Yes, she did. So we cut to them, like, or we cut back to the interrogation room, and they tell, they're telling Jeff that they found blood in his van. And this is where we get a little bit of exposition, because he says that Tristan had a miscarriage. We cut to them rushing Tristan to a hospital, and then back to the interrogation room, and Craven being like, I know you had something to do with this boy! It's like, he's trying to blame a miscarriage on Jeff? Like, what happened here?
It was all the booze.
I even wrote here, I really hope this makes sense later.
Craven was really over the top.
He really was, but he was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, go on, get! But yeah, so we cut to Tristan in her room, and with this nurse who has the worst bedside manner ever. Because she's like, you know, it's for the best. Your body was trying to tell you something. It's like, she just lost a baby. Show a bit of compassion. Like, come on now. But so she pulls back the curtain around Tristan's bed, and we get this waterlogged ghost girl doing a janky early 2000s horror backwards walk.
She was walking like Forrest Gump in his leg braces, mama.
Only backwards.
Yeah. I even wrote that. Why is that ghost walking backwards like Forrest Gump in leg braces?
I wrote she did the early 2000s horror walk complete with visual effects blur. Because that was seriously like in every single early 2000s ghost movie. Like, oh, we can do this neat blur effect. Let's do that. So then we get another murder montage. And instead of going home, they all decide, hey, let's go back to Jeff's house and watch these tapes and see if we can figure things out.
House is a very loose use of the word. He lives in an abandoned broom factory.
Which I have to admit, I really liked the setting. I thought that that place looked pretty cool.
It did, but how the fuck is he paying his rent? He's a squatter. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
Well, he bought it for a dollar.
Yeah.
So but, he owns did he it. Say so that? He doesn't have...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He said they were going to tear it down, but he convinced the city to sell it to him for a dollar.
Oh, I must have been hungover from the party at that point.
Say, this is where you got up to get the aspirin and water.
Exactly.
But I'm sitting here going, so wait, the tour's over. She just had a miscarriage. Why is nobody going home to their lives? Like, fuck all this. You know, I'm done now. But they're going
to
go.
They have to know.
I was gonna say, yeah, they're gonna go. But see, that's the thing I don't understand, because at this point, Kim was only there, or Gothy McGotherson was only there because she thought the movie was cool. So what the fuck does she have to be there for? Steven and Tristan were there to do research, and all the research was destroyed. So, and she just had a fucking miscarriage. So it's like, why not go home to your lives? I could get why Erica's still there, because like she wants to commune with the fucking Blair Witch. But everybody else, like, go home. Why are you?
Princess Buttercup doesn't really have a family.
Right. Exactly. So it makes sense that she's sticking around, but the rest of them, it's like, you know, go back to your lives. But anyway, so they go back to this abandoned factory that Jeff calls a home, and they decide they're gonna watch the tapes. Now, we get a quick cut back to the interrogation, which shows us nothing other than the cops circling the table again. So I don't know why they kept cutting back to the interrogation other than to tell us, like, you know, the other stuff you're seeing already happened. The stuff you're seeing now is the interrogation. Like, I don't know. I don't get why they're doing it. But so we see them. They have to go into this factory. They have to go over this like rickety little concrete bridge. And Jeff makes a point of don't lean on the railings, you know. And then there's this big like ravine with water running through it that goes underneath the concrete bridge.
It's his moat.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, but again, to be fair, like, I think when we were all in our early 20s, if any of us was given the option to live in this giant factory with a fucking moat on the edge of the forest, I think most of us would have taken that option.
I'd still be there.
I was just going to say, I think I would still live there, too.
Especially when you bought it for a dollar.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Like, you own it for a dollar. Like, yeah, it's going to need some work, but come on. That's pretty damn cool.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Zing. But, so I this part I thought was funny, because Jeff opens the door and we hear all these dogs barking. And he's like, oh my God, quick, get in before they get here. And everyone just panics and runs in. He closes the door laughing, opens it, and you hear the dogs barking again. He closes it, and he's like, cheapest burglar alarm in Burkittsville. I was like, that's pretty fun. But now we see that Jeff is like obsessed with security, and he's got fucking cameras everywhere, because, well, that's going to be a plot device. It's very crucial to the plot that everything is being recorded.
Chekhov's camera.
Exactly. So we cut to Steven and Tristan. Like, Tristan needs to go to bed. Jeff is like, here, take my bedroom. It's got the biggest bed in it. So they go off, and Erica, she's like, thanks for letting me crash here, but take me off your fucking mailing list. And then Gothy McBitchpants is like, hey, you got out of the hospital too soon because you're still fucking nuts. It's like, holy shit. Like, way to show some hospitality. But then we get flashback to Jizzmouth because Jeff is thinking about being nuts. And Tristan explains to Steven that she saw the little ghost girl and says that it's the same girl from the Blair Witch Black Bible, which was Eileen Treacle. Now, the Blair Witch Black Bible, this is something that we have not heard anything about at all in this movie. This is something that irks me about this film in general. It requires you to have done research about the mythos behind the movie before watching the movie to understand everything in it. So if you didn't watch the little docu-series that they did in lead up to the first Blair Witch movie, or if you didn't read any of the comic books or anything, you would know nothing about the Blair Witch Black Bible, because it ain't mentioned in the first movie to my knowledge. And this is the first time they're mentioning it here. So it's like, well, what the fuck is that? Like, so for the casual viewer, it's like, Blair Witch Black Bible, huh? What? Like, it just, ugh, that hurt. So yeah, so we cut to the group watching the tapes, and we cut back, like, back and forth between, like, there's a little montage going on. They're watching the tapes, we cut back to Steven and Tristan in bed, and it's back and forth, and we're getting little bits of them talking about the loss of the baby. You know, she's apologizing, saying that, you know, she knows how much Steven wanted the baby. You know, she starts crying, he's telling her he just wants her to be okay, and it's, so it's like, you know, at this point we see that, you know, everything is not okay, but he's still in his right mind, which will, you know, change. So yeah, we cut back again to them watching the tapes. Erica is bitching about being bored. And then they notice on the tapes that the big-ass tree is gone, and in its place is a tiny little sapling. Now, I'll get into this more at the end of the film, but this is where I was like, oh, wait, I kind of dig this. Because it plays into something that they expound on in the next Blair Witch movie.
There's three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they remade it, but different, right?
No, it's not a remake. It's a sequel.
Oh, wait, the new one that just came out recently?
Yeah, it's like this, it's Blair Witch, the sequel to The Blair Witch, or The Blair Witch Project, just like Halloween is the sequel to Halloween, and The Predator is the sequel to Predator.
Okay, so The.
Yeah, or The Thing is the prequel to The Thing. This is that Hollywood trend that really pisses me off.
Okay, like, I thought maybe there was like, I don't know, Blair Witch 3 Electric Boogaloo or something. But I did know that there was a more recent one that came out. But I don't know, even after watching this one, I don't know if I could stomach it.
I will say this. Out of the three films, the latest Blair Witch movie, I think, is by far the best. It's really well done. And it's hard. Okay, the first watch, it might be a little hard to figure out what the fuck's going on, but the more you think about it, and especially if you watch it again, you know, having knowledge of the film already, like you watch it a second time, you will see so much shit that you didn't pick up on the first time around. Because when I saw it in the theater, I liked it, but I wasn't crazy about it. I was like, okay, you know, it was pretty good. It wasn't bad. And then I watched it again later, like I think it was after it came out on streaming. And I started noticing a bunch of shit that I missed the first time around, and it made me like the film a lot more. Like, once you start dissecting it, it's like, oh shit, there's a lot to unpack here. So I think it's a good film. I think it was Adam Wingard that did it, and he's done some good films.
Okay, I respect your opinion on movies, so I will give it a watch.
Well, thank you. No, I think you'll dig it. I like I said, the first watch through, you're probably going to be like, no, what the fuck is that happening? Like, you know, there's going to be a couple what the fuck moments. I guarantee it.
Well, I have it in Midsommar.
Oh.
But then the more I thought about it after, like, that part with the old people on the cliff,
oof.
Shane's like, can you come here and help me? I'm like, there is some shit about to go down.
Oh, that movie, man. Whew, that's a hard watch. That's a great film. But man, it's a hard watch. But
anyway.
So yeah, so we get to that, like, we, like I said, they see that the tree is now this big fucking tree, and you know, Jeff was like, I told you that wasn't always there, you know, and then we see God.
You make him sound like quite the jackass. I mean, which he is.
I was going to say, the shoe fits. I mean, but I love it because now we see Gothy McRashy sees this giant red mark.
Gothy McRashy.
I keep laughing like this. I'm going to have to take a potty break.
Oh, Lord. But so she's got this big rash on her shoulder and she quickly covers it up because they're like, what the fuck is that? You know, like, what's that herpes on your shoulder? And
she's like, I needed money.
She covers it up and she's like, it's just chafing from the backpack. And I just wrote, foreshadow.
Chekhov's rash.
Oh my God. Oh, it's funny because it's true. Oh my God. So he cut back to the group watching the tapes and we get a sudden flash of Coffin Rock on the tape. Like it's just a quick flash. And the group was like, what the fuck was that? And now we cut to Tristan calling for Steven. Now, Steven had come down to look at the tapes as well, and he goes upstairs and finds her asleep. Then he hears this moaning outside, and he's like, what the fuck? And he looks out there. He can't see anything, so he goes to the front door. And as he opens it, we get janky backwards walking ghost girl, and she's like, you brought it back with you, and disappears.
Well, that's after he sees Erica.
No, that's coming up.
On the bridge.
That's coming up. So she does the, you brought it back with you. And then she goes upstairs and he sits down on the bed. Tristan wakes up and she explains to Steven that she had a dream of kids peeping up her dress. So she hurt them. And it's like, wait, are you going to expand on that a little bit?
That was the most random fucking conversation. Like, we talk about, like, fodder dialogue.
Right.
That is fucking fodder dialogue.
It was ridiculous because she's like, she's talking about the crying and he goes, you heard that too? And she's like, in my dream, there were kids peeping up my dress, so I hurt them. And he just looks at her and they cut away.
Because he was like, the fuck you just say?
So we get this little cut back to them watching the tapes, and then it cuts back again to Steven and Tristan talking, and she's like, or he wants to leave. He's like, we need to get out of here. And she's like, she doesn't want to leave until they figure out what happened to their research. And he tries to get her to take a sleeping pill, and she's like, I don't want it. He's like, take the damn pill. Like, he goes, he's really good at angry acting. Like,
yes.
He hypes it up real fast. But now we cut to the interrogation room, and this time it's with Steven, and he's crying and saying, it was an accident. I swear to Christ, it was an accident. And then we cut back to them watching the tapes. Like, that's the other thing I noticed about this movie. We're watching a movie about people watching a movie. Like, the entire fucking movie, they're watching these fucking tapes. It's like, oh, this is annoying. But suddenly we see a little time skip in the tape and a little like ghostly image. So they start
naked ghost pole dancing on a tree.
Yeah. But I love it because they slow it down and Jeff just goes, ladies and gentlemen, that there is a naked woman. Like, oh my God. So they cut away. Erica gets up to go get some coffee and she ends up talking to Steven in the kitchen, who is overacting like crazy in this scene. Because she's like, she's asking him if he's okay. Like, she opens up the fridge. She sees that there's an old box of chicken and some coffee in the freezer.
It's and stale coffee.
Yeah, that's all they got.
And the good value KFC.
Right. And I love it because she turns to Steven. She's like, are you okay? And he's like, I want to leave. And she's like, oh, well, you should leave. And he's like, I'm stressed, okay? And it's like, holy shit.
That escalated quickly.
Exactly.
Yes, it did.
And so now, out of nowhere, she gets all handsy because, of course, she is, and just starts rubbing on him. They start making out. Like, where did that come from? Like, speaking of things escalating quickly.
Now, I want to preface this by saying that this movie has been on like HBO, Showtime, blah, 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 forever.
Right.
Every time it's on, maybe I'll watch like 10 minutes and I'm like, eh, no, no, no. So I've never seen the thing in its entirety from beginning to end. So my thought right here is like, your girlfriend just had a miscarriage and you're going to fuck some stranger in another stranger's home on his kitchen table.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, he like, is
that why he was crying and saying it was an accident? I just fell and my dick went in her.
Pretty much.
Oh, oh, God. Yeah, I mean, none of these people are good people. So she starts rubbing on him. They start making out. She rips open his shirt, and we see the runic markings on his body, like rashy runic markings. And they both look scared, and she's like, does it hurt? And he's like, no, they don't hurt at all. So then they start making out again, and she claws from his chest down through his belly and just, like, it, like, gashes in his body, and all this blood starts pouring out. And they look at each other, and then suddenly they're sitting at either end of the table, like, none of it actually happened, and they both look scared. And then the others call to them and say, like, hey, you gotta come see this naked lady. They
come. Come here, look at the naked chick.
And they all go back to see the naked woman. And I love this because throughout the movie, Jeff has all this techno babble. And this is another thing that always pisses me off in film and television when, like, you see it's a lot of times it's in like crime shows where they have a security camera and they're like, stop, zoom, enhance. Like, that shit don't happen. That's not real. You can't do this. And it's all like, backward keystroke, you know, I can change the footage and the angle, and but like, shut the fuck up. No, you can't. It's a VCR. Like,
again, I'm thinking of Super Troopers. Enhance. Enhance.
Exactly.
And Jeff's like, I am all that is man.
It pisses me off every time I see it. And man, it was super prevalent back then. But so he does some techno babble and is able to change the angle of the footage so they can see her face. And they find out that it's Erica. And she flips out. She's like, you know, she doesn't understand why she's the naked chick on there.
And they're just all like, damn titties.
Damn titties. Look at the boobies.
But here's the funny part is when this happened, suddenly my movie shut off and Siri turned on, because I'm watching it on my iPad. Siri turned on and started talking about recording technology. It scared the shit out of me, because I'm like, oh my God, the Blair Witch is watching. She knows that I'm making fun of her movie. Oh, man. It scared the crap out of me. So this is the second time we've had a Siri jump scare during the show. Oh, man. But so Erica spazzes out, doesn't know why she's, you know, she's dancing naked. And Gothy McBeer Run decides she needs Jeff keys to go get booze. So she's like, give me your keys. And he just hands them over like, oh, yeah, I've only known you a day. Here, take my van.
Not even a day. No, it's been a day at that point, yeah.
He thinks he'll get it in if he lets her borrow the car.
He's like, oh, that's easier than making a movie about you.
Because in his head, he thinks, oh, goth chicks. Goth chicks. Probably the closest I'll ever get to fucking a corpse. Legally.
Oh, he's also probably thinking if she gets boozed up, I have a better chance.
Exactly.
Because, you know, he's a fucking creep. But, so now we see Erica praying in, like, a little circle of candles, and, like, she's freaking out at this point.
She's and, like, light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Pretty much. And then she looks at Gothy, and she's like, we brought something back. I can feel it. And then Erica shows Gothy McBodmod that she has the pagan alphabet on her skin. And Gothy checks herself and sees that those rashes are also the same thing. And she's like, I love this because she's like, it's nothing, you know, it's just a rash. Yeah, a rash in the shape of the fucking pagan alphabet. Okay. And she's like, but they're growing and there's more of them. It's like, yeah, okay. It's some poison oak, really.
At this point in the movie, Erica is turning into like a really bad, like Bizarro Nancy from The Craft.
She really is. Oh, God. But so now we get the murder montage again, and Erica tells her they've been touched by a witch, that that's why they have the pagan alphabet on their skin, and they're the next chosen to die. And I wrote, make up your damn mind. Witches are good. Witches are bad. I can't keep up.
You're so wishy-washy.
But so Gothy goes to the store for some beer, and we get the three creeper locals that all just come right up to the camera. Like, the one guy goes, sweet. And the other guy goes, yo, Morticia. And the other guy goes, hey, Elvira, I got something you could suck the blood out of. Now, here's the thing. If you're bleeding and that's happening, it's being done wrong. I'm sorry. And furthermore, if you're bleeding from there, you're going to lose the erection. So...
Do you know this from experience?
Well, no, but it fills with blood that get hard, so...
Oh, now we're getting a biology lesson today, boys and girls.
I love it.
Take some notes.
She goes, oh yeah, whip it out, and then walks away all fast. Like, I don't want to see if he actually does whip it out.
Why is she only buying a six-pack? Like, she's going to need a whole...
That's what my question was.
She's going to need a lot more beer to get through that.
Right. I think she just bought it for herself.
Mm-hmm. She's so fucking selfish.
She wasn't going to share. But I love this because she goes to get beer and freaking the mechanic is still laying on the floor and he's like looking straight up. So like she steps over his head. So he's got a clear shot up her dress. I love it.
That's why he's been on the floor the whole time.
Well, it's even better because what he says, he goes, I'm finished now. I'm like, I bet you are. So and now suddenly we get the fat local with the cart of deviled ham. She comes out of nowhere like a fucking shark and just rams into Gothy McBeerby. And she's like, you're with the witch people. And she goes, lady, I'm just here to get groceries. And she goes, witch, and runs away without her cart of ham.
So that reminds me of something that happened to me when I lived in Buffalo.
Uh-oh.
I went to back in the day when I lived in Buffalo many, many years ago, it was Wilson Farms, not 7-Eleven. There's a Wilson Farms on, I don't know, it's on Elmwood Avenue, like near where the co-op and Spot Coffee are.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I had a 99 Ford Escort. I pull in and there was this old woman, her name was Jean. She had a lot of mental health issues. She was a schizophrenic and she was very well known in the Elmwood Village area. And I mean, you guys know me, I wear a lot of black. So just got out of work, driving my black car, walk in to get some beer from the Wilson Farms. Jean was in there. And as I'm walking down the aisle, she starts yelling, witch! Witch! Pointing to my car, the witch drives the devil's chariot! And then she went running out of the store. So watching that, I felt attacked. I had a flashback.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
That's one of my fun memories from the years I lived in. I lived off of Elmwood Avenue.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. Oh man, so we get the local scampers away, leaving her ham in the cart, and so Gothy goes up to buy the beer and the cashier is just a complete bitch to her and refuses to sell her the beer and keeps filing her nails. Like, we don't take kindly to your kind around here. And so Gothy starts yelling at her and the cashier clicks on the security cam. Like, I don't know why the security camera wasn't already just recording, but whatever. Usually it's a silent alarm that you set off, but she's turned on the cameras.
Well, they only turn it on when suspicious goth people are in there.
Exactly. Yeah,
they don't want to see what that lady's doing with the deviled ham all day.
Well, that she was driving a camo van, so the minute she walks out, she's invisible when she gets in the van.
That's true.
That's like the best fucking mystery machine ever.
Especially for out in the woods.
Exactly.
So they get into a little argument and Gothy flicks Peggy's name tag. She's like, listen here, Peggy. And just flicks. She momentarily becomes a Karen. And She gets pissed off and hucks the money at her, throws her beer in a bag, and she's like, keep your fucking change, and walks away.
But first she asks to speak to the manager, and doesn't Peggy say, mm-hmm. I am the manager?
That's
she's right. Like, well, yes. Tell that bitch.
To do her job.
Yeah, because I thought that part was absolutely great.
I forgot about this. So yeah, she did go full Karen. She asked for the manager.
And then she told her to tell that bitch to do her job.
And then she throws the money at her.
Oh, storms,
puts the beer in a paper bag and walks out holding it like it's an infant.
Well, that beer was very precious to her at that point.
Did you also see that she was drinking Wicked Ale?
I did yeah. not. I missed that.
Yeah. I thought that Wicked was very Ale. Cliche.
Well, this film is full of cliches.
Exactly. Speaking of cliches, she starts driving, or the boys are gone from outside. Mm-hmm. She gets in the Camo Mystery Machine.
Starts driving. Where did all the boys go?
Yep.
I don't know. They just disappeared. Maybe they went to go dig up a corpse to fuck. I don't know. Small town. What are you going to do on a Saturday night? But then here come a gaggle of ghost children.
Exactly.
Well, before that, the three stoners throw rocks through the back of the window.
That's right.
They stone her window.
The stoners stoned her window.
Because she was a witch. They wanted to stone her. They thought she was a witch.
Here's what I love. It's a moving fucking van. Like, so she's a moving target. Like, she's driving on an old road in the middle of the night. So they were able to jump out of the woods and huck rocks faster than the van was going to make contact with it.
Yeah.
Like, no. That's ridiculous.
It's witchcraft.
So she looks back, sees the broken window, then looks forward, and you see the seven ghost kids all backing up. She gasps and turns the wheel, and then casually drifts into a tree. You know, like, I love how slow that crash was.
Well, you don't want to hit the ghost children. What if you kill them again?
But I love it, though, because she was like, ah, and just slowly drove into the tree.
Then the funniest thing is she gets back, like, there is no visible damage.
Right.
Because he's got that, like, I don't know, that thing that people put on the front of their big vehicles so you don't fuck it up if you hit a deer.
A bumper?
No, it's like a reinforced bumper with, like, teeth and, like,
it's
shards of glass.
It's like the van equivalent of a cow catcher for a train.
Yes, thank you.
But before that, when she crashes, we cut back to Tristan staring out a window, like watching an owl, like they're just watching each other. And then we see Erica spazzing out in her little prayer circle, and Jeff is just sitting there watching her, like slowly sipping his coffee, like unblinking, watching her on the security camera, sipping away at his coffee.
It's turning him on.
I think it was. And then we cut back to Gothy getting out of the van. And she looks around. Nobody's there. So we don't see the kids who threw the rock. We don't see the ghost kids. She gets back in the van and slowly drives home, or drives back to Jeff's place. And when she gets back, she goes to grab a beer out of the bag and accidentally pokes herself with the cashier's nail file, which is really bloody for just a finger poke. So foreshadow there.
Chekhov's finger thing.
Chekhov's nail file.
I don't know why I couldn't think of nail file finger thing.
I'm going to call it a finger thing from now on.
But there's no visible damage, and she's like, I fucked up your fender.
Right. Well, this is the best part, though, because she when she walks in, we hear Jeff just yell down to her like she's his fucking slave. He's like, Kim, coffee, now!
He's like, been ordering them
coffee,
all.
Coffee,
like,
man!
You stay in my house, you bring me coffee.
But so she goes to make him coffee, and she just brings the whole pot up, and he's passed out in the chair. So now, and she even sighs. Like, they take the time to show you that she is visibly annoyed that she took the time to make the coffee and he's asleep. So she plops it down in front of him, sits down on the couch behind him, and cracks open her beer and starts rocking back and forth. And she's like, I messed up your fender. And it's like, you just saw he was asleep. Why are you talking to him? Like, because, you know he's asleep.
Because that way she can say, I told you.
Right. But I love it because she starts talking about how she messed up the fender, and this part annoyed the hell out of me. She gets all exasperated and talks about the ghost kids, and she's like, there were seven kids, and they were the seven kids that Rustin Parr killed. You know, I just know because, you know, spooky goth powers. And again, if you didn't see the first movie recently, like, I know when this movie came out, it was only like a year after or 2 years after the first movie. I can't remember. Was part one on 98 or 99? I think it was 99.
I think it was 99.
Yeah. So this was only a year later. So I get it's still fresh in people's memories. But again, in this film, we have not mentioned Rustin Parr at all. But according to the mythos, he's the one who was under the Blair Witch's influence, who was killing the kids in the basement of the house, that he would make them stand in the corner facing away while he murdered the other kids. Just like at the end of the first movie where you see the one guy standing in the corner when Heather goes running in and gets clobbered by something. So again, it irked me because I'm like, if you didn't see the first movie, you would have no fucking clue what she's talking about here. And so suddenly she gets a vision of Jeff being electrocuted. Like, and it was like that scene in Home Alone.
Because if he gets electrocuted and dies, he can't be mad at her for fucking up the fender.
Right. I was like, what the fuck? And then he wakes up and just demands coffee. And she's like, next to your arm. And he's like, oh, okay. And then it cuts to the next day. So we see Erica and Steven are both kind of freaked out. And Steven is looking at Erica, and he suddenly has a vision of fucking her. And then she looks back at him and has a vision of slashing open his stomach. And then we cut to them talking to Tristan. She still doesn't want to leave, but Steven is demanding that they go. He turns to say something to Erica, and suddenly she's gone. So, like, Erica just disappears. They look out the window, and they see that the van is now completely totaled, and no one knows what the fuck just happened. So Jeff says to Goffy, he's like, I thought you just messed up the fender, man. And he's like, you know, yet you got that information when you were sleeping. But, you know, whatever, plot device. So Tristan shows up and casually mentions, this part was great because they're all staring. They're staring at the busted up van outside. And Tristan walks in and just goes, they dip their hands in your blood and press them on your body. It's like, what? Who does that? What the fuck are you talking about?
She did say it like they all knew what she was talking about, too.
Right, and it was so casual. And then I love it, too, because they all look at her the same way I was looking at the screen. They're like, the fuck you just say? And then she says,
the fuck?
She goes, the children, it's something I dreamt. Jeff dreamt it, too. Look, and she points at him, and he just knows, oh, okay, I guess this is where I'm supposed to lift up my shirt. So he lifts up his shirt, and you see little handprints all over his body, like the little rashy handprints.
I thought I felt something there.
Well, because he starts freaking out. Oh, my God. So they all start to compare body marks, and, like, Steven has the runic marks, you know, Gothy has them. Tristan apparently doesn't, or at least she doesn't show if she does. And then Gothy gets all shocked and goes, where is Erica? Even though she's already been missing. So, like, why are you suddenly acting like you just realized she was missing, even though we were just talking about her missing? So we get the montage of the Scooby Gang searching through the house looking for Erica. And I love it because they're opening up cupboards, looking under beds, like, Erica, where you at?
Oh my goodness.
It was so bad.
Maybe she's hiding it in the closet.
Well, and the great part is, like, there's a camera view of, like, I think it was Steven opening, like, a high kitchen cupboard. Like she climbed up into the into the cupboard.
Right.
Oh my Lord. So
I mean,
now
she's a Wiccan. He doesn't understand, like, he doesn't know maybe witches go to higher ground.
Witches like to hide with canned goods.
But the thing, did we mention, because the sound did cut out for a minute for me, for a moment, that her clothes were all perfectly aligned, like she had been raptured?
No, that's actually, yeah, that happens next.
She's the Invisible Woman.
Right.
Okay, I thought they found her clothes as if she was raptured, and that's when they realized that she was gone.
No, no, they were looking around and trying to find her, and then that's when they walked into the room with the prayer circle, and her clothes were laying in the prayer circle, and then they freak. Because they're like, what the fuck is going on? What's happening?
She became light as a feather.
Right. And then when we find the clothes, that's where we do a cutaway to Gothy in the interrogation room. And she's looking in the two-way mirror, and she's pulling up her shirt and looking at the marks, and they're all gone. And then we cut back to Jeff's place, and Jeff accuses Gothy of her and Erica fucking with him. He's like, you guys are fucking with me, man. I love this because for absolutely no reason, they try to call Erica's dad. Like, how is a guy who disowned her gonna know where she's hiding? Like,
well, they thought she might have went back home.
But it's like, in that quick a time, like, didn't she say, like, she was from another state?
Yes. So she teleported. Witch, they don't know how witches operate. They don't really understand. Like, does
I want to know how they got her dad's number.
Right. This is what I'm saying. I have so many questions about this scene. Like, my first thought was, did you guys call to be like, so when Erica was little, did she have a specific hiding spot that she always used? Like, you know, did she always hide in the dishwasher or something? Like, what?
Did she hide in the dishwasher?
That's the only place they didn't look yet.
They got her phone number because she probably had to sign some type of waiver with, like, if I die, this is my next of kin, even though I've been disowned.
Yeah, that's a good point. But, oh, my God. So it's like, while he's, so Jeff is talking to the preacher's secretary. And he's like, it's very important. It's about her. It's about his daughter. And she's like, they don't have any children. And he goes, oh, no, I know, like, he disowned her or whatever. But like, she goes, no, they have never had children. And I wrote, uh-oh, they slipped into the Berenstain reality. So they finally find footage on the tapes of their cameras being trashed. And while that's happening, Craven calls them and tells them to put on the news because, oh, I'll get into this for a second. So they turn on the news and we see that there's been a brutal murder at Coffin Rock, and it's the group that they sent to Coffin Rock. Now, Craven accuses Jeff and tells him to stay put. But here's the thing I love. Like, so this police officer or this sheriff, there's a murder investigation. And he's going to call the prime suspect and be like, yeah, you see on the TV there, I see dead people. You did it, boy. Don't you go running now.
You like, done did it.
Don't you think that they would have gone there first with a warrant and been like, we're going to take you in for questioning rather than, hey, look at me on the news. You see me in the background waving at you?
Yoo-hoo!
Yoo-hoo!
Oh, it was so bad. And then out of nowhere, fucking Suicide Owl flies through the window because reasons.
Well, because in some cultures, owl is a sign of death, and now the owl is dead.
I was going to say that the owl couldn't stand staring at Tristan anymore. It was like, fuck this.
I'm done with this.
That's quite possible.
Oh, man. So now they all look at the owl and see it dead on the ground. And then we cut to Jeff, like, all of them sitting there. And Jeff is losing it. He no longer trusts anyone. He thinks Erica's fucking with him. Like, Gothy gets all pissed off. And she's like, no one's messing with you. And I love this because Jeff suddenly adopts an accent for this scene.
Yes.
I noticed that too. I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Right, because he's like, she was a witch, man. She was a fucking pissed off witch, man. It's like, wait, what just happened?
Do you know what he did? He pulled a rip.
He totally did. He was using all the accents. Oh, man.
In the deleted footage is, oh, she was a witch, man. You know what I say. All right. She was a witch.
I told you she was a witch.
She was a witch, man.
This I tell you, good sir.
No, Mr. Witch here.
No, Miss Erica, no here. But I love it because he's like, she's making herself appear and making herself fucking disappear, man. Like, what the shit?
So it now, ain't fucking right, man.
Turns into Spicoli for a minute. So we cut back to the interrogation room with Gothy, and the one officer throws a towel at her and he goes, wipe that shit off your damn face. What do you think, it makes you look spooky or something? I damn near pissed myself.
She wipes it off and it doesn't do anything.
She just smears it around.
So now she just looks like she had a really rough night at the Continental. Too much mirror dancing and shots of vodka. Oh, shots of Everclear.
Oh my god.
Oh boy. The Elder Goths are having too much fun with this episode.
I remember when we were all talking about this being on the list, and I had said that at least it's going to be a fun episode.
It definitely is. It makes up for the experience of watching it.
Oh, my God. So now we cut back to Jeff's place, and he goes in the back room to talk to Gothy and apologize, and sees her eating the owl. He blinks, and she's eating old freezer chicken.
That's Chester's chicken.
I mean, a bird's a bird, right? Word? Bird is the word.
And I love it, though, because she's eating it all daintily. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she's like, why? I'm not pissed or nothing. She just keeps eating the old chicken. Oh, my God. So now we see Tristan is just watching out the window. All of them are kind of talking. And she says that she sees Eric out in the woods. They all look and see nothing. And then Tristan looks back to Stephen and says that, Stephen tells her she has to go to bed. And she says, you need to look again. You need to look harder. So he looks out and he does see Erica dancing backwards around a tree. So he goes running outside. And as soon as he walks out, we see Erica on the bridge and he takes a step forward and she does a little backwards walk. And then the bridge collapses and he's like holding on for dear life, trying to climb up. And for whatever reason, Erica turns into the pre-waterlogged ghost girl, but it still has Erica's voice, and says, you know who it is. And then we see Tristan standing in the door watching Steven struggle, and she just looks bored. She's like, oh, I'm done with this movie now. And she just walks away. Steven's trying to climb up, and then Jeff and Gothy come running over and help Steven up. And then we cut to Tristan dancing on the bed saying they did it. The little Buster boys, they hanged her. And she tries to explain that she's been dreaming Ellie's dreams. Now, Ellie is the Blair Witch and, she's seeing them through Ellie's eyes. So basically Tristan is kind of admitting to the Blair Witch possessing her mind. She then freaks out. Gothy wants to call the hospital for Tristan. And Jeff tells her there's a phone book in the desk drawer. She goes to get it, and this is where she finds file folders on each of them, complete with Polaroids. So she demands to know what the fuck is going on. Jeff has no clue how they got there. They all start arguing and accusing each other. And then we cut to the interrogation room with Steven, and they throw down the file folder in front of him, telling him they want to know how a good boy like him got mixed up in all of this. And then we cut back to Jeff's house, like, you know, the flashback, and Craven is calling Jeff's house demanding that they all come outside. They explain to him that they can't come out because the bridge is broken, and he's like, what are you talking about? I'm outside your house right now. Get out here. They look on the camera and see that the bridge is perfectly fine. So, you know, they're like, what the fuck? They start heading down there. We get a little quick cut of Jeff with the jizz mouth.
Don't forget, he calls him a little twerp.
Oh, that's right. He goes, get your ass out.
I'm at the doorstep, you little twerp.
Oh, man.
And then he starts yelling, get out here now! I'm at the door!
I loved how Craven had no chill. Like, he was just losing it. But so Craven is still yelling at him. Like, you could hear, like, as Jeff's heading toward the door, you can hear Craven outside yelling to get his ass out there. And Jeff opens the door and sees that the bridge is still out. And now there's a pack of dogs, like, on the other side of the bridge, barking and snarling at him. So he closes the door, grabs a rifle, and goes to shoot the dogs, but they're now gone. So Steven and Gothy come down, and they're like, holy shit, where'd you get the gun? What are you doing? And he's like, relax, relax, I'm putting it away. And he goes to put it in the closet, and we see Erica standing in the closet facing away from them. So they kind of freak out a little bit, like, what the fuck? And they turn her around, and she's dead. And they start screaming, and we cut to all of them sitting around, like, there's a corpse in the closet, and then we do a quick cut to them just sitting in the living room.
But also, she is not, like, freshly dead. Like, she's got the cataract glaze over her eyes.
Right, like, she's been dead for a little while.
Right.
And, she's kind of blue tinted, so I don't know. Like,
that floor's got to be messy being dead for a while in there. You know that her bowels let themselves go.
Oh yeah. And she was only wearing some tiny little underpants, so yeah.
Yeah, that... so how did they not smell the poop?
Exactly. But I love it because they're all... oh good,
where was she when he got the gun?
Exactly. This and now this will play into a little bit about what something I want to bring up at the end. But so now they cut back to like them all sitting around accusing one another. And freaking Jeff gets the accent again, and he's like, Steven accuses Jeff of, you know, because he found her, he must have done something. He's like, I didn't kill her, Steven. All right, man. Like, where the fuck does that thing come from? And then he says, he's like, Kim was up here with me. Maybe it was you, man. Like, he starts accusing Steven. And then Steven's like, I didn't do it. And he goes, he says something about, I swear on my word. And Jeff goes, which is exactly jack shit to me.
Well, you know, remember, he was in the quote-unquote loony bin. So maybe he has multiple personalities.
Yeah.
For the different voices.
That,
different tones.
You know, that does explain some of this. Oh, man, we have to make our own backstory to understand this film.
Yep.
So, oh, man. So, yeah, while this whole arguing is going on, Tristan shows up and she says it's backwards. And then she goes, the little girl, Erica's dancing, Widdershins. And Gothy tells Jeff to play the tape backwards. So he does, and nothing. And then Steven, no, here's that more of that techno babble. No, enter the keystrokes backwards. And I wrote, because that's a thing. Like, what the fuck? And apparently, like magic, the tape starts to play the missing footage. And we see them partying naked in the woods, destroying the documents, destroying the cameras, fucking each other, you know, cutting on each other. And then we see Tristan.
Like, just the way we're like fucking on each other, cutting on each other.
At this point, I'm just so done with this movie.
I know, I just wanted to end.
And so we see Tristan standing there in like a cloak, and she hands out machetes and knives. Like, where the fuck did she get that?
Machetes.
She's like, and you have a machete, and you have a hunting knife, and you, and so they scamper off nakedly into the woods with their knives, going to hunt the other tourists. And
it's kind of like the Teddy Bears Picnic is playing. Like, you see them scamper off, and in my head I'm hearing, if you go out in the woods today, you're in for a big surprise. Woo!
Well, those other tour groups were definitely in for a big surprise. So now this is the part that I mentioned. I had something to say about this earlier, is we see Tristan hiding the tapes on the tape that we're watching.
So who taped the tape?
Exactly. Which tapes that were hid? What? Like, it doesn't make sense.
That was one of the blunders of the film.
No. The many blunders.
I was going to say.
It was taped, and then she took the tape out and put it in with the other tapes.
Oh. So she just, she made a show of burying those tapes and then unburying them to put the other one. Gotcha. So now we cut back to them, and they're all sitting around looking shocked, but Tristan has her back to them, like she wouldn't watch the tape. So she tries to walk away, but they grab her and start accusing her of doing this. Jeff starts recording her and telling her to admit what she did. Steven accuses her of killing their baby. Tristan is acting like really fucking weird. She starts flipping them off, starts walking higher up the stairs, saying you're all gonna fucking die. She then accuses them of wanting to kill her, but saying that you're all afraid to do it. Jeff accuses her of being a witch, and Tristan says, she looks at him and says, Tristan is gone. And this is where she wraps a rope around her own neck and says, you want to kill me. And Tristan starts taunting them. And, you know, Steven's like, you know, what's wrong with you? What's going on? And eventually she starts, you know, mocking him and telling him, like, basically how worthless he is and all that. And he shoves her away from him. She falls over the railing and snaps her neck. And, of course, it's all caught on camera. The security cameras, Jeff's camera, all that. We get a cut of the murder montage. And then it's a news footage of the next day. And we see a montage of the group being arrested as murderers. And they're being accused of being the ones who killed the people at Coffin Rock. And we see more of the murder montage. And then we see them, you know, being let out in handcuffs. So now we see them all in different interrogation rooms, but all being interrogated. We see them saying, like, you know, we didn't do anything, yada, yada, you know, all the cliches. I didn't do it. It wasn't me. Yada, yada. you know, she caught you red-handed. Wasn't me. That whole thing. They all become Shaggy for a minute.
And not the cartoon character.
Exactly.
For all you youngins out there.
But, so yeah, we see Gothy explaining, like, she didn't do anything wrong. And they say, well, what did Peggy do to you? What did that store clerk do? She's like, what are you talking about? You know, she was a total bitch to me. And blah, like, basically tries to make it out like she was the victim. And they were like, oh, really? So they turned on the videotape and we see Gothy attacking her, grabbing her nail file and stabbing her repeatedly in the throat, throwing it in the bag with the beer and scampering off as Peggy lays there bleeding out on her newspaper. And then we see, you know, Jeff is saying, like, he didn't do anything wrong, and they play the video footage, and we see him choking Erica, like, in the prayer circle, and then dragging her into the closet and standing her up and, like, looking up at the camera.
And he's naked.
Yeah, they both naked. Like, maybe he was trying to make that Wiccan movie so he could get in her pants. But then
the only way he was getting in her pants.
Exactly. And then we cut to Steven, like, freaking out, saying, like, they didn't do anything wrong. He's like, watch the tapes. Jeff taped everything. So now we see a tape of the group taunting Tristan and her begging them for her life, saying, like, what's wrong with you people? I didn't do anything. You're not right. You know, you're not right in the head, all that. Like, she's flipping out. And they're just like, witch, you fucking witch. And that's when Steven's like, you killed our baby. And she's crying and, like, trying, she's pleading with him. They wrap the rope around her neck, kill her. And then he looks at the camera and goes, fucking witch. Like, that part cracked me up. So they're all shocked and look, you know, complete disbelief. Like, they can't believe what happened. And then we cut to a scene of the woods with a whole new pack of goths entering the woods to repeat the cycle. Credits roll, end movie.
I thought it was very interesting that in that, excuse me, at the very end, the news montage that they were showing, one of the reporters says that violent art has inspired real life violence. And that is so telling of the time because this was post-Columbine.
Yep.
And when Columbine happened, it was another assault on, like, metal music. Like, it was Marilyn Manson that, you know, the whole, like, listen to the record backwards. And
mm-hmm.
I just thought that was very, very appropriate for the period that it happened in.
Oh yeah, I mean it was a lot. I remember when that happened, and there was a lot of violent video games are the cause, you know, metal music is the cause, violent movies is the cause. So much so that I remember in my creative writing class in 2000 when I was at NCCC, it was basically me versus the rest of the class because we were talking about violent entertainment making people do this kind of stuff. And I was saying that that's bullshit. I personally don't believe that. I don't think that violent entertainment makes people do this stuff. I think you already have to be unhinged and kind of
fucked up
to be even inspired by violent entertainment. I mean, and I'm going to use myself as an example here, but I've had a steady diet of violent entertainment my whole fucking life. I've been a horror fan. I've played violent video games. Like, I grew up on Mortal Kombat and Doom, you know, like those were the games I played all the time. You know, I love horror entertainment. I love metal music. Like, I've barely been in a fist fight, and all three fist fights I've been in has been because someone else attacked me, you know?
So, right. I had too much Catholic guilt to do anything like that.
Right.
Oh my God. My entire life, I was raised Catholic. Oh, you're going to go to hell. Oh, my, you're going to go to hell.
Exactly.
When Shane and I eloped, I looked at my dad when we came back that day and told him, I go, well, I'm not living in sin anymore, so there's that.
I'll be honest. One of the reasons that I proposed to Jess when we first moved out is because all I could think of was like, oh, my God, like, we're going to be living together before we're married. Like, I feel guilty. So yeah,
exactly. I mean, we were engaged when we bought the house, but
well, that's the thing. The night we moved in together, I proposed to her. So I was like, all right, we're engaged at least.
Thank you, Jesus. Let me go to heaven.
Right. Oh man. So I couldn't find a lot of trivia that we haven't already mentioned. Like, we talked about how, you know, Artisan really wanted to make the quick sequel, and Maurice mentioned how, you know, the original creators had nothing to do with this because of that. You know, and then how, and Maurice, you also mentioned how Artisan kind of forced reshoots that Berlinger was very unhappy about. But we see, what was I going to say? Yeah, the witch's alphabet in the film is actually Norse runic symbols known as the Elder Futhark. I'm probably saying that wrong.
Bless you.
Exactly. And then the only thing that I found that I thought was kind of interesting was that the Erica spinning around the tree, the ghostly image of Erica spinning around the tree, was supposed to be a reference to Evil Dead 2, where the dead girlfriend spins around the tree and then disappears. So I was like, oh, okay, I could see that.
There's a couple other references to movies. Playing the Tapes Backwards is a reference to The Exorcist. And The Barking Dogs was a reference to The Omen.
Oh, okay.
Hmm.
I didn't even think about that. But now, here's the thing I wanted to bring up that I kept saying I'll save till the end. Now, it's kind of funny because this theory was built outside of the films. But a lot of fans theorize that the Blair Witch can control time and space within the woods around Burkittsville. So it's like it's almost like she can manipulate time itself. And there's some examples of this. Like, in the first film, the house that they go into at the end of the movie, that house was supposed to have been destroyed. Like, it had burned down, and that was the ruined house, or the ruined foundation that we see in this film, where the giant tree is growing out of it. Now, there's the other thing. It's like, okay, there was a giant tree that wasn't there, but then it was a sapling. So, like, is time, are they forward in time and then backward in time? Like, what's going on here? There's a lot of little time travel nods, and that plays a really heavy part of the plot for the third movie, is it deals with time manipulation. But that's based on theories that fans have created about the first two films to make them make more sense. But watching this second movie with that in mind, there's a lot of examples of it where it's like, oh shit, like that would make more sense if it is about time being manipulated. Like, again, with the tree, with the bridge falling and then coming back, like the fact that all of them, you know, friggin' blacked out and a whole bunch of time apparently passed. So it's like, I don't know. It seems like time manipulation would explain a lot of the plot holes.
Well, yeah. Witchcraft.
Oh, man.
I think that the most enjoyable part, with the exception of Nickelback, is the soundtrack to this movie. Because in the 90s, like, a movie was made better, even better by its soundtrack. Like, you think of even like Spawn. Spawn was not a super great movie, but the soundtrack is fucking kick-ass.
Oh, I love, like, that soundtrack.
It's such a good soundtrack. Like, Lost Highway, and Spawn is like the movie that I'm saying is not that great, but the other ones, like The Craft, the soundtrack to movies in the 90s, those were kick-ass. It's so rare that you find a movie that is great, and the soundtrack makes it even better. For me right now,
Guardians of
the Galaxy, Atomic Blonde, Baby Driver. Baby Driver was actually written around the soundtrack. You know what?
Yes, it is.
Kevin Spacey's a scumbag, and I used to love him. He was my favorite actor for the longest time. But that is still a fucking fantastic movie.
Yep. I do have to watch that. Maurice has been on me to watch it forever. And honestly, I wanted to see it because of Edgar Wright. You know, that was like the thing that drove me to wanting to see it in the beginning, but I just never got around to it. And it's one of those movies that has been on my list forever, and I still want to see it. I just, there's so many movies that I want to sit down and watch, and it keeps getting kind of moved in the shuffle. So one of these days I will watch it.
I watched it like when the Kevin Spacey stuff first came out, and I had a little twinge of guilt. I'm like, but the movie itself, I mean, I know we're off the topic of horror for a moment, but that movie itself is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
I've definitely heard nothing but good things. But no, I agree with you that the soundtrack to this movie is really good, with the obvious exception. but for me, the thing I really like about this film is I like the concept. I just really don't like the execution. And I can see why it's become a cult favorite over the years. Like, there is quite a fan base for this film. And I think it is because there is some really good ideas here. It's just not the best acted. It's kind of like, how many 80s movies can we say that about, where it's like, especially low budget 80s horror, where there's movies that are like, oh, this is so bad, but there's such good ideas. Like, look at Chopping Mall. That's a fun fucking movie.
Exactly.
But man, it's cheesy as shit. And I mean, that's part of the charm too, but you know, still. I feel that way about this movie, that it's charming, no pun intended. it is charming, but its execution is just very poorly done. But Maurice, what do you think? What are your final thoughts on this?
Terrible movie, good soundtrack. I do agree that if done right, it would have been a lot better movie.
Yeah.
Fortunately, now I'll probably never have to watch it again, so that's a plus.
I will probably end up watching it again, only because I know we mentioned this off the air, but I ended up purchasing it for this podcast.
So did I, but I'll still not watch it again.
See, I can see myself doing like a little mini marathon while I'm working on a project and be like, fuck it, I'm going to put on the Blair Witch movies. But other than that, I can't see myself watching this again other than to watch all three of them in a single evening. So, we should probably wrap this up because it's getting a little long. Do we know what we're doing next? Are we going to do Halloween?
I want to know what Susie thought about it.
Well, she said the soundtrack was her favorite thing.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. I typically will say, even, I always tell Shane, you can watch this with me if you want. Horror is not his thing, and that's totally fine. But this one, like, sometimes even I'll get into a movie and I'm like, are you sure you don't want to sit and watch this with me? This one, when I watched it the other day, he came upstairs for a minute and I was like, he goes, how's it going? I go, I don't want you to sit and watch this with me. I don't even want to watch it. And I think this is the first time that we've watched a movie where I'm like, I don't even want him to sit down and watch it, because he will never let me live it down that's the movie I had him sit down and watch with me.
That's awesome.
True, true.
But I also think, like, I think of movies that I absolutely loved in high school that still had some of those cliches, like The Craft, for example, because that was, you know, that's a movie about witchcraft. Mm-hmm. I didn't see this movie in its entirety until I'm 40 years old. If I hadn't seen The Craft when I was 16, would I still love that movie as much as a 40-year-old as I did when I was 16? Or would I not like it and just be able to appreciate the soundtrack?
Oh, absolutely. Oh my God, that's so prevalent with so many movies I love. Like, when you see a film is very important, especially to some of our favorite films. I think that, like, okay, I'll use Star Wars as an example. Most of us that love Star Wars, it's because we saw it when we were kids. And, like, I mean, really, the Star Wars movies are for kids. So, like, when we saw that growing up, it was amazing. And then many of us were adults when we saw the prequels, and we were like, fuck these movies, they're terrible, rah, rah, rah. But my nephews, who were kids when those movies came out, they fucking love them. Like, that's their Star Wars. You know, so I think it's very important, the time of when you see certain films. A lot of my favorites, like my favorite movie of all time, Return of the Living Dead. I guarantee you that had I saw that as an adult for the first time, I would have probably had fun with it, but I don't think it would hold the place it holds for me. Like, the fact that I saw that when I was like 5 or 6 years old, like it was when it first came out on video that I saw it, and it scared the shit out of me, but also intrigued me. Like, I loved the special effects. I loved the looks of the monsters. Obviously, naked Linnea Quigley was pretty good. But the soundtrack was amazing. Like, everything hit at the right point for my impressionable young mind to absorb that film. So it really holds a high mark for me. So yeah, I think that totally makes sense. Like, if you saw The Craft now for the first time, you'd probably enjoy it for what it is, but I don't think it would be up there as, like, you know, a great film.
Yeah.
But, so speaking of other films, since we definitely should wrap this up, it's like, after I do the edits, it'll probably still be like an hour and 50 minutes.
I think we should keep them guessing.
Really? You want to keep them guessing?
Yeah, you know.
Surprise.
Everything is so predictable these days. I mean, we're all locked up inside with whoever we live with. You know what your day-to-day is going to be. Don't you want a surprise once in a while from the boogeyman's closet?
True. Well, we do have some surprises in store for next month as well.
We do. So. But I think we should keep it a surprise what the next movie is we're going to review.
Keep them guessing. All right. Well, with that in mind, I guess we'll wrap it up here. So, as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
I'm still not dead yet.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram @TheBoogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.